Welcome back to Season 2 of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, wouldn't you know it, it's Jason Miller.
Oh, hey, wow. Welcome back, me and you.
Yes.
And you.
And to Boomafoo.
I wasn't even thinking about that.
Really?
Well, what a great show.
Yeah, I know,
right? Informative. Scrap this. We're now as a Boomafoo. Review podcast. It's a Boomer review? Yes.
Nice. It's a Boomer review. Okay, that's hard to say, but
that's a tough
people
one.
Could get behind it.
I'm putting that in the back pocket.
All right, well, other than Boomer food, did you watch anything else this week?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Because Great Canadian Baking Show season 5 has hit the Netflix airwaves.
All right.
And I'm into that.
Nice.
So I've only watched the first episode. Because me and another friend have an agreement about a schedule to watch that we can generally keep pace with each other.
Okay.
And actually, if anything, I'm probably the slow link in that in that conversation. But I am on a hot streak. For the last 2 seasons, I have correctly chosen the winning baker from episode 1.
Wow.
So in an attempt to three-peat, I have my pick in. And this was from the beginning of episode 1. So this... not possibly a spoiler because no developments had happened yet. I chose Dugan. I may regret that. But I know a Great Canadian Baking Show winner pedigree when I see one.
Okay.
2 for 2 in the ring.
Yeah.
And Dugan gave me the vibe that he's going all the way. So that's my pick. Lock it in right now.
All right.
Dugan season 5 winner. The results are already out there because it was slow to get to Netflix. If a viewer didn't care about spoilers, they could listen to me say that, look it up, and immediately know if I am correct or not. But I have to wait. I got to make my way through. What did you watch, Kyle?
Wow, did I ever do some watching as well? Because there was a lot of TV happening, as has been the common theme of the last few weeks. Stranger Things season 4, volume 2 came out.
Ooh.
My God.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
I did enjoy it. Yes.
Is this the end?
No,
the
there's end? One more.
Oh, yes. Okay. So I can't ask for a season at a glance review yet.
No. I mean,
I won't.
No. Yeah.
It's not finished yet. You can't.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think a lot of people were expecting more death consequence, like
it's not
impact.
No.
But like, yeah, I don't think if you've been following the pattern so far, of the Stranger Things seasons, like I don't think they're ever gonna kill some of their darlings until like the last season.
They love fake death too. They like to tease it that it's maybe someone's dead and gone, but no. So I wouldn't expect any big deaths till maybe the very end, and even then, like, why at that point? What's
who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
You gotta have spinoff potential eventually when they're all like old, and you could do like an It Part 2 thing where they're all like adults but now Stranger Things.
That's true.
But like, they did a lot of, you know how in movies and TV when people talk about the future and they're like going on and on about it, and you just like you know something's amiss, like
clearly
you know that, like, okay, if they're talking about their future and everything and they, you know what they want, you gotta think that they're not gonna make it out.
They're not getting it. That's just trying to add an even more of a gut punch to their eventual demise.
But it was kind of a misdirect. There was some characters that were talking about stuff like plans that they wanted to have, and they were still alive at the end of the season to potentially do that. So
far.
Yeah. I did also watch the season 3 finale for The Boys.
Oh.
That was yesterday night, and
it's
a good show. It's a good show. Probably one of their best seasons, if not their best season.
Dang.
I think they didn't necessarily stick the landing in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was like a season arc character motivations that just got thrown out the window when certain things happened. But for the most part, overall satisfying.
Hey, that's wicked. Yeah.
Yeah. I also thought they were going to kill off more characters than they ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even misdirects with that too, where like people you thought died, literally you thought died on screen. But then they were fine.
Kill people.
Yeah.
Why are we so scared to murder on TV? Kill main characters. Have some fun with it. Cut loose.
Yeah. But yeah, it's good. I recommend it. And the last sort of TV thing that I watched, I had mentioned before that Molly and I have been chipping away at Jujutsu Kaisen.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen the movie before watching the show.
Like a fool.
We watched the show and I finished it last night. The first season. There's more to come, but it's a good show.
Nice.
I liked it more than I liked Demon Slayer, but less than I liked Attack on Titan.
I mean, Attack on Titan's like a gold standard.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and I think I liked it a lot more because they spent more time in the fights. It's a cool show. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm excited for more. Unlike Demon Slayer, which I'm like begrudgingly going to watch, but like
you're excited for less.
Yeah, yeah.
Please remove some from having been watched.
The last thing I did watch, other than TV, was one movie, and last night I saw Thor: Love and Thunder.
I'm hearing that the reviews are all mixed up. There's people from all spectrums reporting in. Mm-hmm. What's the Kyle view?
This was the one of the first movies where I actually sat back and was like, is Marvel like struggling right now? Like it was pretty mid. Like it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was pretty average. Like one of the YouTubers I watch in their review, Dan Merle, he mentioned that people were worried about superhero fatigue. And like the feeling of like going to a movie all the time and it's a superhero. But like this is what superhero fatigue feels like on a filmmaking side.
Yeah.
Where it feels like it's just content at this point.
Yeah.
Like they're just pushing them out quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think this one, especially with some of the emotional stakes of the story, should have had more time to cook a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because there's parts of it that are really fun and there's parts of it that should have been really emotional, but I ended up not really feeling a lot because of the way that sometimes a joke would undercut what the emotion of the scene was, or just like the dialogue didn't seem that great, which is strange for Taika because Taika's usually pretty strong.
He normally hits.
Yeah. And it was especially strange for me that Korg, which was a character that, you know, he plays and obviously he writes for, was not funny. I did not find it funny at all.
Dang.
And it was pretty much every time he was on screen, he was making some like quip that just didn't fit the scene or just was not funny. So overall, I came out mostly positive. It did give me, you know, a pretty decent enough feel and like exciting times, whatever. But I do recognize a lot of the problems. And mm-hmm. I think they need to slow down. Like as much as I love, you know, getting all these new characters and seeing all these characters all the time, the fact that we've had so many movies and TV shows in the last 365 days and they're this quality. Oh, one thing I did talk about was that the episode of Ms. Marvel that came out on Thursday or on Wednesday, I did not like. In fact, I really despised. It was just like not good. I was like, I stayed up for it too. And on like the 1 a.m. drop. And I was like laying in bed looking at it like, what the fuck is even happening? Why are we here? And the first two episodes were so strong. So anyways, back to Thor. And so I don't think that helped that it was a bad episode. And then this like kind of mediocre movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think they just need to pump the brakes a little bit.
Give it some room. Yeah. We don't have to pump out three of these a year.
Yeah.
Or four or five. There's a lot that come out every year.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Especially now. Like another part of it is that because earlier Marvel movies had more space between them, there was a lesser, maybe a lesser extent of criticism given to them because the overall quality is still positive. It's still good.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're comparing them so frequently,
yeah,
you're starting to notice that their regular formula is not that amazing
anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is, you know, that's coming from me right now in the standings. Yeah. There's Captain America and Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, up there in my top five, which, you know, is obviously some people a wrong choice because they're Marvel movies, maybe not the best picks, but like that's how I felt about them then. And I still really love those movies. But now I don't know.
Yeah. I got burnt out of these so long ago.
Yeah.
I was like, I stopped caring. I didn't stop fully caring, but I would have lived without watching it back before Endgame.
Yeah.
Like after Infinity War, I was kind of done with them. And then I watched Infinity or Endgame to round it out, but I skipped some of them. And I don't know if I'm going to watch Thor because as much as it is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. To watch a movie and then shit on it because it's Marvel. And that is fun. Don't get me wrong. Right? I enjoy that tremendously. I don't know if that's worth it.
Yeah.
And also a bad reason to do something is just to dislike it. Because that's not going to give it a fair chance.
Yeah. And I haven't found any of them to be that memorable since Endgame.
Yeah.
Like the Spider-Man movies have been okay. Mm-hmm. Like No Way Home was good. And I think it was memorable because of the nostalgia factors that it had in it.
Yeah.
Like the rest of the movie outside of Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, I don't really remember that much.
Mm-hmm.
And like I was talking to Molly about it on our way home because she went with me to Thor. I was kind of going on a rant, to be honest, about Phase 4 and Marvel post Endgame. Mm-hmm. And like I mentioned Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, and she was like, I forgot those even came out.
I never bothered.
Yeah.
They didn't seem like things I would care to go watch.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of how a lot of people are going to start to feel.
Yeah.
If they keep on this path of just pumping them out nonstop and then expecting people to show up with the quality the same that it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And also expecting audiences to have watched everything, because yes. I've missed a lot. And I feel like unless it's something that is so removed from the main storyline told from everything else.
Yeah.
Or it is only based on the main movie line. Like, I never watched
WandaVision.
WandaVision. And then because of that, I didn't watch some Doctor Strange. And then because of that, I haven't watched other stuff. And now I'm just way out of it. And I don't care to invest 30 hours to get back in.
And I think that's going to happen to a lot of people. Because Ms. Marvel's happening right now. The Marvels comes out next year, which is a Captain Marvel sequel that's supposed to feature Monica Rambeau from WandaVision and Ms. Marvel from, obviously, Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. Two characters from TV shows that have never appeared in a movie before.
Yeah.
And so if people don't know anything about the TV shows or don't spend, you know, the, it's not 6 hours, but this, you know, the close to 6 hours of time to watch these TV shows, are they going to be caught up? Are they going to get the same enjoyment out of it as people that you that want to be committed? I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they'll make a change until people stop paying for it, until or to people stop going.
Oh, it's all about bottom line. They need to bleed money on one before they actually care about changing something.
Definitely. But anyways, Marvel round over. The only other movie we both watched this week was the one we're talking about in this episode. Of course, season 2 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2014. And for episode 23, we are talking about How to Train Your Dragon 2. Had you seen it before?
I have seen it before. Yes. I've seen all in theaters, and I don't think I watched two since I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
But I did sit my little butt down in a theater and watch this with a big thing of popcorn and had a fun time. Kyle, have you seen this before?
Yes.
Yeah, I know you've seen it before.
Of course. And I love this series. I didn't mention it in what I watched this week, but I also rewatched the first one to lead up to that, which might have been a mistake. We'll get to that in a bit. But you didn't rewatch the first one?
I didn't rewatch it, and I don't think that was a mistake.
Okay.
Have you rewatched two before?
Yes, I have. I think I definitely rewatched it before three came out, which was in 2018.
Ooh, that sounds right.
Four years between each one.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen this one quite to the extent that I watched the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen it a few times and I've only seen the third one once. So might have to revisit that one.
Me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's get into it. If you're interested in How to Train Your Dragon 2, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen this movie yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
How to Train Your Dragon 2 is an American computer animated action fantasy film directed by Dean DeBlois, I believe is the pronunciation. Also written by Dean DeBlois and is based on the How to Train Your Dragon book series. I didn't actually know that until I looked it up.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen the books before.
No, me neither.
It's not a movie or TV show, so.
Yeah, read? What are we, nerds? Grow up. This is starring Jay Baruchel as Hiccup, Kate Blanchett as Valka, Gerard Butler as Stoke the Vast, Craig Ferguson as Gobber, and America Ferrera as Astrid. This has a runtime of 102 minutes and was released on June 13th, 2014. Kyle, what do you think about How to Train Your Dragon 2?
It's good.
It's good.
I like it.
Yeah. This actually on a rewatch, I didn't think it was as strong as maybe the first time when I saw it in theaters. Yeah. This is a good movie, in my opinion, to watch once in theaters, have a good time with it, and then maybe don't think too hard about it afterwards.
I had the same experience.
Yeah.
I have rewatched this a few times, but I do agree that I don't think this is one that is the most worth revisiting of the series. Like, when you compare it to the series, it's probably the weakest. I haven't rewatched three in a while.
Story wise, I do believe it's probably the weakest.
But like, still, it is a really good movie. It's just like comparing to the other two really quality movies, especially the first one, which obviously holds like a special place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as strong. Mm-hmm. And I do think I hurt myself by rewatching the first one because I love the first one. And I don't think I will ever not love the first one.
Because yeah.
it is one of the best computer animated movies of all time.
Yeah.
So then I watched that one and then this one. And I could just kind of see the quality dip in story. Obviously, mm-hmm. the animation is a bit of a step up and it's beautiful. But I felt that the characters just were a little bit stranger in this one.
This seemed like a little aside from what could have been a main story. Like you tighten this up, shorten it, and it's a good like TV show or two episode TV show run. Yeah. Because no one really has much of an arc. They introduce the mom, which is something, but like it doesn't go crazy giving anyone like a particularly powerful story, really.
Yeah.
It's just kind of builds on where things were. And at the end, you've just lost a dad and gained a mom, but like otherwise everyone's the same.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, Toothless is more badass now. More
I guess, yeah. But like, I don't know.
I do think they benefited from jumping ahead in time to see like how things established once the dragons became more integrated.
Very agree.
But yeah, I think character-wise, it wasn't the strongest of the group. Yeah.
Do you want to give it a little plot?
I'm going to read straight through this plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's How to Train Your Dragon 2. 5 years after the Viking villagers of Burk and the dragons made peace, they live together in harmony. Hiccup and his dragon Toothless, the Night Fury, discover and map unexplored lands. Now 20 years old, Hiccup is being pressured by his father, Stoic the Vast, to succeed him as the chieftain, although Hiccup feels unsure he is ready. While investigating a burnt forest, Hiccup and Astrid discover the remains of a fort encased in ice and meet a group of dragon trappers. Their leader, Eret, attempts to capture their dragons for their employer, Drago Bloodfist, who plots to capture and enslave all dragons into becoming his soldiers. Hiccup and Astrid escape and warn Stoic about Drago. Stoic fortifies Burk to prepare for battle. Hiccup, however, refuses to believe war is inevitable and flies off to talk to Drago. Stoic stops him, explaining that once he met Drago at the Gathering of Chieftains, where Drago had offered them protection from dragons if they pledged to serve him. When they laughed it off as a joke, he and his dragons attacked them, with Stoic being the sole survivor. Undeterred, Hiccup flies off with Toothless in search of Drago to try and reason with him. They instead meet a mysterious dragon rider who is revealed to be Hiccup's long-lost mother, Valka. She explains that she, like her son, could not bring herself to kill dragons. After being carried off during a dragon raid, she spent 20 years rescuing dragons from Drago and bringing them to an island nest created out of ice by a gigantic ice-spewing alpha dragon called the Bewilderbeast, which is able to control smaller dragons by emitting hypnotic sound waves. Stoic and his lieutenant Gobber track Hiccup to the nest, where Stoic discovers his wife is alive. Meanwhile, Astrid and the other riders force Eret to lead them to Drago, who captures them and their dragons, and, learning of Burk's dragons, sends his armada to attack the dragon nest. He also attempts to have Eret executed, but Astrid's dragon Stormfly saves him. A grateful Eret later helps her and the others escape. At the nest, a battle ensues between the dragon riders, Valka's dragons, and Drago's armada, during which Drago reveals he has his own Bewilderbeast to challenge the Alpha. The two colossal dragons fight, ending with Drago's Bewilderbeast killing its rival and becoming the new Alpha. Drago's Bewilderbeast seizes control of all the adult dragons. Hiccup tries to pursue Drago to end the violence, but Drago orders his Bewilderbeast to have Toothless kill him. The hypnotized Toothless fires a plasma bolt towards Hiccup, but Stoic pushes him out of the way and is killed instead. The Bewilderbeast momentarily relinquishes control of Toothless, but Hiccup drives Toothless away in a fit of despair over his father's death. Drago maroons Hiccup and the others on the island and rides Toothless, again under the control of the Bewilderbeast, to lead his army to conquer Burk. Stoic is given a Viking funeral, and Hiccup, now having lost both his father and dragon, is unsure what to do. Valka encouragingly tells him he alone can unite humans and dragons. Inspired by her words and his father's, Hiccup and his allies return to Burk to stop Drago by riding the baby dragons, which are immune to the Bewilderbeast's control. Back at Burk, they find that Drago has attacked the village and taken control of its dragons. With a heartfelt apology, Hiccup frees Toothless from the Bewilderbeast's control, much to Drago's surprise. Hiccup and Toothless confront Drago, but the Bewilderbeast encases them in ice. However, Toothless blasts away the ice and enters a glowing, superpowered state, enraged that the Bewilderbeast tried to hurt Hiccup. Toothless then challenges the Bewilderbeast to protect his rider, shooting it in the face repeatedly, which breaks its control over the other dragons who side with Toothless as the new Alpha. All the dragons repeatedly fire at the Bewilderbeast until Toothless fires a final massive blast, breaking its left tusk. Defeated, the Bewilderbeast retreats with Drago on his back. The Vikings and dragons celebrate their victory, and Hiccup is made chieftain of Berk, while all the dragons from both Berk and Valka's sanctuary bow before Toothless as their new king. Afterwards, Berk undergoes repairs, with Hiccup feeling certain that its dragons can defend it. But that's How to Train Dragon 2.
Wow.
Wow.
I think what stood out the most to me about this movie is it has a weird reversal of morals, because throughout the movie, it's like, no, I can talk to him. I can convince him that dragons and people are good.
Yeah.
And then in the end, he wins by beating the shit out of his alpha dragon and essentially either killing or exiling Drago. Like, there's no, he never gets convinced of anything. If anything, Hiccup's idea, his optimistic ideals of what can be accomplished through a good conversation between friends, completely overturned. It's like, oh, no, violence is the answer to this one, actually. Now you're the chief.
Yeah, and I think that is kind of the point of the movie in a weird sense, because like the first movie was all about Hiccup trying to convince everybody that dragons were good and can be partners to people.
Mm-hmm.
But that also is solved through violence in the end, because they go to the nest and Hiccup and the other riders eventually defeat the big massive dragon by blasting its wings and making it crash. And so all of Hiccup's efforts are resolved by violence. So it does seem weird that in this state, he thinks that he can convince somebody by just talking to them when that's never happened.
Yeah.
Even though he has convinced his father, he convinced him through action.
Also, someone very predisposed to already loving him since it's his father.
Yeah.
Yeah. That just seemed like a weird arc to give it, where, again, it's everything actually gets resolved through violence. The way to overcome this great power was to make Toothless go super saiyan.
Yeah.
It's like they give him a Glock and he wins. Like, it's not really a powerful message about love and everything. The only thing that really happens is the power of friendship breaks the like alpha control over Toothless. But you knew that was going to happen.
Definitely.
This isn't something special.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think that's what he wanted to show Drago.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he couldn't show that unless something like this happened.
Yeah.
What are you going to show? Toothless is my best friend. Oh, great. He's dancing around. We're best friends. See, like, that's great. No, he's not going to believe you, because he controls his dragons his way and you control your dragons your way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. It's just weird that Hiccup wouldn't listen to Stoic, but I guess he's stubborn.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say the animation is a huge step forward. And even though it's not the most amazing thing, I was still very pleasantly surprised by how well it stood up when watching it.
Definitely. The one thing that I also was kind of weirded out by was some of the dialogue is so strange, especially Astrid's.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like her voice actress or if it was just the dialogue herself, but like something felt odd about her, even in that first scene when they're like sitting and chatting about how Stoic wants Hiccup to become the chieftain. And like she's like doing weird mannerisms. I don't know. It just felt weird.
It didn't seem like they knew what to do with her.
Definitely
and she
not,
only
yeah.
existed to further plot. But they did that in a way that didn't make sense to her character at all.
Yeah.
Like that exchange when Hiccup's describing how Stoic asked him to be the chief.
Yeah.
That was just a weird conversation. And it's very early in. And it kind of like throws you out of the characters a little bit.
Yeah.
Because even though like it kind of seems like something Hiccup would do, I just found it was an annoying way to do exposition.
Yeah.
It was too meta.
Yeah. Also, the line at the end, the choice that was probably directed to him, but the way that Jay Baruchel says, "Our dragons," I'm like, oh, God, that was not fine. I didn't like that delivery at all.
Oh, that one seemed like he was contracted to do that. That was not a dealer's choice.
What did you think of the scene when Stoic meets the mother? Because I think that's my favorite scene of the movie.
I think that was really well done. And I thought it was a weird thing to do to bring the mom back.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that mom and Stoic work together makes it all worthwhile. That is such a sweet way to have that relationship. I really liked it.
Yeah, I got more emotional at their meet again than when Stoic dies.
Me too.
Because it is just really sweet to have this reunion. And even though, you know, she's like upset or like thinks he's going to be upset because she was alive and she never came back. And just like the way that he walks right up to her and, you know, his line is great. But yeah, and Stoic's death is like sad, but I don't know it didn't have the same impact that I thought it might. Maybe it was this time. I feel like I was more impacted by it in the theater and maybe mm-hmm. on the first couple of times that I watched it because I wasn't expecting it. But
I really like how respectful they show Stoic being to Valka.
That's her name.
I thought that was sweet. I also agree the death didn't carry much weight, and I think it was done in such a cliched way that it wasn't really that impactful, where he literally jumps in front of a bullet for his son.
Yeah.
When, like, you know that, like, you kind of expect that someone is going to take that bullet because Toothless is going to shoot him, so it didn't have much impact. I think they could have put more care into have a more fitting death for Stoic than what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I mean, it is interesting that they chose to make Toothless do it, because that's something that is like challenging and that you don't see in a lot of kids movies
mm-hmm.
where, you know, a character you're supposed to love is responsible for the death of another main character that you're supposed to love. And while it was under mind control and you can just easily talk that away as it wasn't his fault because he was being manipulated and mm-hmm. controlled into doing it, it is still like, oh shit, Toothless was the one that killed him. And you can see that it would piss off Hiccup for a second.
Yeah.
But not to the extent that you would think that he would tell him to go away.
I didn't get that either. It wasn't needed at all.
No.
Toothless could have just left.
Yeah.
And Hiccup could have just been mourning his dad and it would have been fine.
Yeah. And Hiccup knows that he was being controlled.
Yeah.
He, over anybody, should mm-hmm. know that this was in his nature and it was not his fault.
Yeah.
I get that you're upset, but Toothless did not want to do that.
Yeah.
And you know that. So what? I don't know. But he just had to get Toothless away to go with Drago for a bit so that they could ride the baby dragons back. And that was also really quickly resolved. The fact that they had to leave the island and then they were there. But yeah.
Yeah, they could have added more stress by making the situation seem more dire of not being able to get off the island until they remember the baby dragons. That is solved very quickly, but I don't know. I never had a huge issue with pacing overall because it's like a pretty decently written, like in terms of like how it's paced and from event to event, I didn't really have an issue with it. So I don't hate it.
Yeah.
It wasn't one that I'll really take away from as far as like the writing and emotional moments weren't as strong as more of an issue.
Yeah. But like overall, it is still like a really great movie. I think we've just been picking out the points that we don't like because they're easier to identify. But yeah, like we've mentioned, the animation is beautiful. I do think that it does have some really good, well-written moments. I do like Hiccup and Valka just like hanging out.
Yeah,
and
sort of like really sweet.
Having that relationship develop and her like them learning from each other about dragons and like rekindling that relationship. Eret and that crew was fine.
They were fine. It's just like a small subplot for comic relief and it works.
And that like that group is like so high profile casting.
Yeah.
Like because Kit Harington is Eret. Yeah. And then you have like Kristen Wiig, Jonah Hill, JT Miller, who, you know, he's got some weird shit going on. But I don't remember his name, but McLovin.
I don't remember either.
He's the one guy. But anyways, it's so, and they are all really good voice actors. And even Jay Baruchel does like a mostly good job as Hiccup.
Yeah.
I think he's got a very recognizable voice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that works for Hiccup. It's just some of the delivery, I think direction was just like a little kid focused.
It comes off very strong that the writing and the direction is more at blame for any issues with the characters than the voice acting, because it is a voice acting clinic.
Yeah.
It is very good.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's also like really well shot in a sense. Like I'm saying, like I'm putting air quotes here, but shot, just like the way they compose the frames for the animations. Like there's one of Stoic walking through the village early on, and just like the lighting on his like fur coat and him walking into there, it's just like, it's beautiful. But I understand why it looks so good, because they consulted Roger Deakins.
Oh,
for
interesting,
like director of photography stuff, which is like, I mean, he's obviously amazing, but I think that shined through a little bit in the animation. Yeah,
I think you can tell that the people around this movie really care.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of effort put in, and like the score is enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't as standout to me as the first one was, but it absolutely does its job in that movie. Mm-hmm. And you feel the way you're supposed to. And it just has a really good universe that is held up by everything else around the story going on.
Definitely. And you mentioned the score, but that's one thing that I didn't want to touch on too, because that first score is kind of becoming an all-timer. Like people will, like, I hear that song on like on TikTok or Instagram all the time, like the Test Flight one. It's huge now. It's like an iconic score. Mm-hmm. And I think this one tried to reiterate it in a sense, and they added like vocals to parts of it. And in for the most part, it works because the themes themselves are really good. I just don't think it is as strong when you're comparing, which is like hard to compare.
It's because, a tough comparison in almost every aspect to the first one.
That's that's where I think this film lost me a little bit, and it's all in the comparison because it's just like not as strong overall, but it's still good.
It's still good. I'm glad I didn't watch one before watching two. Yeah. Because like I remember one enough that I didn't even feel the need to watch it again, because I've probably seen that a couple times.
Yeah,
but it's just such a strong movie that it sticks with you.
Yeah.
So like I was ready to go just right into two. Mm-hmm. And I am so glad, because the story was kind of weak. And remembering the vapors of one, I think helped tie two in better than if it was a right back to back.
Definitely. But anyways, do you want to get into reviews?
Yeah, let's get into some reviews. Kyle, what do you think the critics and audiences of Rotten Tomatoes have to say?
Oh, I think it's going to be mid to high 80s for critics and probably like the same for audiences. Yeah.
Higher.
Oh, really?
By a little bit. Critics 91.
Okay. Wow.
Audiences 89. So I'll give you that one. You can take audiences.
Thank you.
Critics, they took a step forward. IMDb has this at a 7.8 and Metacritic 77.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to hear some high numbers though.
Ooh.
This movie has a box office of $615 million. On a budget of $145 million.
That's pretty good.
Very good return. Yeah. Big budget. It's nice seeing an animated movie get that kind of budget, because it shows in some parts.
Yeah.
And it finished number 12 at the box office.
Pretty strong.
As a sequel, too. But what are our scores? Kyle, I'm going to kick it off with you and your enjoyment.
I hit this with a 3.5.
Excellent. I'm giving this a 3. It just, the story wasn't quite there. It didn't quite grip, but so much good still exists in here.
Totally.
What's your craft?
I gave this a 4.
Excellent. I like that as well. Again, you can tell that the people making this movie care about this movie, and it shows. So I'm also slapping down a 4 for the same reasons. Execution.
I gave this a 3. I think some of the writing does suffer in this one, and I probably gave it a half point doc because of that last line delivery. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This is a 3. For the exact same reasons. And Kyle, finally, what is your rewatchability?
Well, I think if you're going to rewatch any of the series, it's probably 1.
Yeah.
I think 2 is not the most rewatchable. I gave it a 3. I think the first one is probably a 4.5 or a 5. And I should have watched the third one again. But for this one, it's a 3.
I'm giving this one a 2.
Yeah.
1 is so strong. And 2 impacts the universe overall. It doesn't feel very heavy in the storyline. Mm. If I were to do a How to Train Your Dragon overall rewatch, I'd probably just do 1.
Wow.
I would probably stop there because 1 is the high note.
You wouldn't throw in like the 10 to 12 DreamWorks spinoff TV shows that they have?
I don't know about any of
those. They have like Netflix shows too.
I didn't even know that.
All the cast return.
Oh,
well, I don't know if all the cast return, but definitely Jay Baruchel and America, what's her name?
America Ferrara?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah,
I think they're like all that. There. Mm-hmm. But, wow.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I mean, I'm not so invested in the universe that I'm going to watch all the spinoffs. I just I like number either. 1.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the score phase, you have given this a 13.5 out of 20 for a 68%, and I have given this a 12 out of 20 for a 60%.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, that's a sequel for you. Now it's time for ranking. Kyle, would you like your movies?
Sure. Hit me with my movies.
All right. Top to bottom, Whiplash, Grand Budapest, Paddington, Captain America, Guardians, Dawn, Interstellar, Chief. Oh, Chef, what am I talking about? Hiccup's the Chief, not
John Favreau.
John Favreau. Then it's Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, Under the Skin, Lego, Selma, John Wick, What We Do in the Shadows, Boyhood, Snowpiercer, Babadook, Imitation Game, Big Hero 6, Foxcatcher, American Sniper, The Theory of Everything. Where is How to Train Your Dragon? Dosey dose.
Coming into this season, I thought that I liked this one more than Lego. mm-hmm. but I don't. Mm-hmm. It is my new number 17 under Boyhood over Snowpiercer.
Oh, you know what? I like betting where you're putting stuff. And I was right in the zone.
Nice.
For mine, I have top to bottom Grand Budapest, Whiplash, Paddington, Dawn, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, John Wick, Selma, Guardians, What We Do in the Shadows, Under the Skin, Chef, Lego, Babadook, Captain America, Snowpiercer, Boyhood, Big Hero 6, The Theory of Everything, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. This is my new number 18. Above Boyhood, below Snowpiercer. So like similar. We're on
both
the same
dancing
picture.
Around the Boyhood yeah. Snowpiercer range.
Well, God, that's gonna bring us to
fun Letterboxd reviews.
This has a score of 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and there were a couple Letterboxd reviews yeah. that I'd qualify as fun. First one, Matt Lynch, 2.5 stars. Viking Pokemon. I'm glad that was the main takeaway.
Yeah. I feel like this movie and Pokemon have the same sort of like fan base niche.
They do. I mean, very similar vibes.
Yeah.
I always played Pokemon for fun, wacky creatures. That's why I never finished them, because you run out of fun, wacky creatures and then you got to grind for like 20 hours to beat the Elite Four. And I just don't care. They can stay the Elite Four. I don't need that validation. I got my friends now.
Yeah. I think my sister is like the embodiment of that, because yeah. she literally loves Pokemon and How to Train Your Dragon series. Literally has tattoos of both.
She does. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. Big fan. Hmm. Muy Fuego, 0.5 stars. Solid sequel. That would just call me for hell. That does not match at all.
Yeah.
Terrible score. Great movie. Parker, 1.5 stars. The film hums along the same emotional register for the entire 100 minutes. It's almost impressively stale. I felt nothing. It's not even like it took feelings away from me. This is like getting Novocaine injected straight into my amygdala. It's also extremely ugly and mixed like an ASMR stream. Why did they make the twin girls so horny? I hated this movie.
They made everybody in that squad horny.
I know. Like, everyone's way too horned. It was bad.
I mean, they're at that age where they're probably.
Yeah. I think it's kind of fitting.
20s. Yeah.
And I think it stays above board.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know, really flexing on the how they make muscles look in the yeah. animation.
They were some good looking muscles on Eric's son of muscles. Eric,
so. Yeah. And lastly, Alonzo, 2 stars. How to shart your farting. Not even a 2.
I didn't even bother. Dude, you could have put the home run. How to start your farting fart poo.
Number 2.
How to start your farting poo is exactly the penultimate version of that. You fell short, Alonzo.
Oh, God, but you were so close to greatness. that was... Shit. My fun Letterbox time.
Good times.
Award details. Kyle, are you aware of any awards this may have been nominated for at the Oscars?
At least one.
At least one.
Probably just one.
It is just one. Okay. It's best animated feature. Yeah. How many do you think it won?
None.
Correct. Other notable awards. This was nominated for the BAFTA for children's feature film.
Right.
And this won best animated feature film like 2 times out of the many, many, many times it was nominated.
Yeah.
It has some wins, a lot of nominations.
Yeah.
I think the critics are all on the same page. It was good, not great.
Yeah. I think it won the Annie Award.
It did win the Annie Award. Yeah. But I can't remember the other one it won. It was.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think level. I remember going into this year and firstly being shocked that Lego wasn't nominated.
Again, that's weird.
Yeah. But yeah. then I think when I was reviewing the actual movies that were nominated, I was like, okay, well, if I have to pick one, it's probably this one.
Yep.
But I don't know how I feel about that anymore.
I feel like maybe when we get to a recap of what should have been nominated, I don't know if I leave this one in. Who's wow. to say? We'll see where that goes. Who right. knows? Okay. Interesting facts, though. Oh, are yeah. you ready for some
I'm
of
ready.
This? All right. Dean DeBloa asked Cate Blanchett to play the role of Valka during the 2011 award season where How to Train Your Dragon was being campaigned for Academy Award recognition. A quote, I told her that I had written the part for her in How to Train Your Dragon 2, and she smiled, saying that the original movie was a big hit in her household with her three boys.
Hmm.
I told her about the character, and I could see it blossoming in her mind.
That's nice. That's sweet.
That's kind of sweet. That's a little wholesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. She does a really great vocal performance. I think she really fits Valka.
Oh, it was written for her.
Yeah.
It was a very good role for her. Jaimin Hansu would often do vocal exercises to prepare for his voice acting. One of those was a loud, terrible scream. Dean DeBloa liked it so much that he decided to use it as Drago's cry to summon his dragons. That was a weird vocal warm-up.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
Interesting, though. Yeah. He's got a great voice.
He does.
And he's like, he's in so much stuff. I mean, even in this year, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
So, wow. Mm, I really like him.
Busy, cool. Busy man. All right, this is a long one. This is the first DreamWorks animation film to use its new animation and lighting software through the entire production.
Wow.
Programs named Primo and Torch will allow much more subtlety in facial animation, the sense of fat jiggle, loose skin, the sensation of skin moving over muscle instead of masses moving together. Dean DeBloa said, "I think the film looks a lot better than the first. In addition, our film is the first to showcase a whole new generation of software that has been developed at DreamWorks called Apollo. In past versions, if you wanted to do something as simple as arch an eyebrow, you would have to select the eyebrow from a menu and input what degree of arch you would want, enter the numerical amount, and wait for that to render." Jesus. "Whereas the new system allows them to work in a much more intuitive way using a stylus and touch-sensitive monitor to grab and manipulate the characters, which now render in real time. It allows animators to go back to working with their hands."
Wow. Do you think they wrote in the Eret, son of Eret, being handsome and muscular bit just so that they could really show off the muscles and fat moving on the skin?
That's such a specific thing to point out. Yes. Of muscle and skin moving independently. Yep. When they had like a slow-mo zoom in of that very thing happening. They were stunting, yeah, on the crowd with that.
And I do agree that it is a big step up from the first one, because like the first one, even being from 2010, which is 13 years ago,
yeah,
almost, it's 2022. It's 12 years ago, almost.
But, I mean, they're in production before it was released. I think 13's fine.
Yeah. And so like, obviously it's going to be dated a little bit, but I didn't expect it to be as dated as it was when I watched it again.
Do you mean it didn't age as well as you thought?
I think the first one still looks nice, but there are some facial things and some movement that I think when you compare it to Pixar movies from that era is not as strong, but then you compare that to this movie and it's a huge step up. So,
You mean, the first one,
the first How to Train Your Dragon. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think like at the time too, it was just so blow your socks off level animation that now looking back, it's not as good.
Well, yeah. I mean, have you watched Toy Story in the last few years? Like the original Toy Story?
No, but I've seen pictures.
Oh my God. Whacked. Their lips are like moving into each other and like, oh my goodness, it's something. But yeah,
that's the issue with trying to make the most realistic looking thing ever is like in 5 years, it looks like crap.
Yeah.
I got one more fact here. I don't know how interesting it is. So it's just it's a medium interesting fact. The song Into a Fantasy, which is heard during the end credits, was written and performed by Alexander Rybak, who also provides the voice for Hiccup in the Norwegian version.
Oh, cool.
That's something.
Wow.
That's sweet. He gets a song and he's a voice actor in Norway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you know that the Ukrainian president does the voice for Paddington in Ukrainian?
Yes. I remember hearing about that.
I don't think we mentioned that in the Paddington episode, but.
Yeah. No, I don't think we did. But now we did. In the How to Train Your Dragon 2 episode.
Yeah, it all comes together.
Full circle. Yeah. Kyle, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with for How to Train Your Dragon 2?
No, I think it's a good time. Not as strong as the first one, but I would recommend it to people. And obviously, if you love this series, you probably love this one too. And there's nothing wrong with that.
So, yeah. I think it's overall fine movie with some strong points and in a good series. So it's fine.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 23 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We love to hear your guys' thoughts on this film or on this episode, so please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Windy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
What day is it?
Judgment Day. You just came in with the fresh recruits.
This is not the end.
The invasion will fail, along with every soldier you are sending. We lose
this is not
everything.
The end.
Come find me when you wake up.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Edge of Tomorrow. It's going to be the last non-Best Picture nominee or Best Picture winner that we're talking about. It's Ooh. The last movie before Best Picture, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's that one.
That we're going to talk about.
That one. You know, it's that one.
So make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.